Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. 160 years ago, the U.S. government agreed to land rights with Michigan's Ojibwe people after discussions in Washington, D.C. The Ojibwe delegation was led by 93-year-old Chief Buffalo, who traveled with the group from Lake Superior to negotiations in the nation's capital. The story of Chief Buffalo was recently told to Lake Superior magazine editor Connie LeMay. WKAR's Peter Wharf spoke with LeMay by phone about the Ojibwe leader's remarkable journey.
Chief Buffalo is one of the outstanding figures that needs to be remembered in general because of what he was able to do and negotiate for his people. He was a chief in the area around the Madeline Island communities. And what was happening is the thing that makes some of the treaty and some of the history with the Ojibwe so tragic is that they weren't fighting and they weren't attacking the European settlers. They were cooperating and trying to incorporate, even though it was difficult, into the changes that were happening. And so they had made a series of treaties outlining land areas and areas that they would also retain and rights that they would retain. They were very savvy negotiators and retained certain rights even in areas that no longer would be under their direct control. But then for some reason, President Zachary Taylor in 1850 did a removal order wanting to remove the Ojibwe people from the Lake Superior region. And anyone who knows the history of Native peoples in the area knows that there were these massive removals, the Trail of Tears to moving the tribes from the western parts of the country into Oklahoma, these mass migrations, forced migrations, and this is what was facing the Ojibwe people.
Connie, let's talk a little bit about what came to be known as the Sandy Lake tragedy.
After that removal order, one of the things that was done in order to try to remove, to expedite the removal, is in earlier treaties, among the negotiations were certain annuities. They would call each year there were material goods and actual cash payments that were to be given out to the tribes and then divided. And this was not charity, or this was not because in fact the economy of the nation was changing. The treaties were making it so that their economy, which was based on hunting and gathering, was having to be changed into a more sedentary and less broad-ranged. You need a large range of territory to feed people if you're doing it through hunting and gathering. And because that territory was being reduced and they were willingly allowing settlement of Europeans into their region, the treaties included payments and annuities that would help transition the economy of the people. Well, those annuities had always been, those payments had always been made on Madeline Island, which was kind of a center hub for people, and it made a lot of sense that it would be there. Well, in order to expedite the removal, they changed the place to a place actually kind of southwest of Duluth, Minnesota, well away from Lake Superior, and they did it late in the year, hoping that they would essentially trap the Ojibwe people there, that they would not be able to come back to their homelands during the winter months, and that they would therefore remove them from Lake Superior, essentially de facto removing them, because a lot of people had to come to get the goods that they were owed through the treaty. Well, they made delays and delays while they were here. Lots of people ended up getting diseases within that community and dying of that. But then also when the payments finally came through late in fall, actually early in winter, there was then the migration back. They did not want to stay in this place. And already people had been dying because of illnesses, because it was not a good place to be. And so they migrated back home And there were many people who died along that route as well. And there are estimates as high as 400 people dying between the area there and then returning home. And it really is a black blot, I think, on the U.S. government that they would do this purposefully. They were trying to get subvert so that people would have to come away from their homeland.
That became known as the Sandy Lake tragedy. I'm speaking with Connie LeMay of Lake Superior magazine. She's the editor. We're talking about Ojibwe chief Buffalo on Current State Today. Okay, so Connie, there was this intentional movement of people and misdirection of funding to the suffering of the Ojibwe people. What was their next move?
It was decided that a group of Ojibwe people would go to Washington, D.C. and try to plead the case and stop this removal. It was led by Chief Buffalo. Now, Chief Buffalo at the time was 93 years old,
yeah.
And yet he was considered a good speaker and a good negotiator, and so he agreed to undertake this journey. So starting out from La Pointe in a canoe, they traveled east and along the way traveled by canoe. And there were six delegates who were Ojibwe and then one, Benjamin Armstrong, who was the interpreter and also was married to a woman from the Ojibwe tribe. And so he was the interpreter for them. They traveled by canoe, by steamership, by train, and after many months, were able to get to Washington, D.C. Then when they got there, they first, of course, encountered the lower-level bureaucrats, mostly in the Office of Indian Affairs, who were very dismissive and essentially told them, go home, you weren't invited here, you don't have permission to come, you have to go back to where you came from. And that was, of course, not what they were going to do. They wanted to be able to plead their case. But as it turned out, there was a serendipitous happening in that the hotel that they were staying at, people were fascinated by these people, both because they came from such a far distance from Lake Superior, but also because they were Ojibwe, a culture nobody in the East really knew of. And so at the hotel, they ended up being invited to eat in the dining room. And when they were in there, there were many members of the cabinet of the president, who was Lord Fillmore. And the cabinet members then began to talk to them and realized, hey, something's, you know, they need to be able to see the president. And so actually through that, they were able to get an audience with President Fillmore, were able to plead their case. They had created a special pipe of peace and were able to actually smoke and do a ceremony with him, pleaded their case. And I should say that all along the route, as they were coming by canoe and by train and by steamership, they were stopping in places like the Upper Peninsula and gathering signatures on a petition from non-Indian people saying, we don't understand why there's a removal. We like the Ojibwe people as our neighbors. They've been good neighbors and they've been good community members, so we oppose the removal order. So between the negotiating and the petitions that they brought, they were able to secure Fillmore's promise that he did, in fact, he rescinded that removal order, and then requested another treaty, which was the Treaty of 1854. Now, that opened up lands in Minnesota, essentially Minnesota's North Shore, and many places in Wisconsin and Michigan, but it also retained hunting, gathering, and other rights to specific areas in the broader ceded territories. Those are the ones, the fishing rights that came up many decades or centuries later, retaining fishing and hunting rights, and then also created these reservations or areas that were to remain tribal homeland. It's an amazing story for a man who in his 90s made this incredible trip in order to save his people from being removed from their sacred homeland.
The incredible story of Ojibwe Chief Buffalo, told to us in the latest issue of Lake Superior magazine by its editor, Connie LeMay. Connie, thanks a lot.
Oh, thanks so much, Peter.
For Current State, this is Peter Wharf.